Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to the Beautifully Designed Game podcast. My name's Marcus Marrett, and on today's show, a man who needs no introduction at all, other than to introduce him, Dan Layden. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Marcus. Thanks for having me on. Honoured.
Oh, the honour's with us, believe me. So, Dan, for anyone who's been living in a jungle that isn't aware of Dan Layden, can you give us a wee introduction to yourself?
I started football art, I suppose, in 2012. So I left college in 2009 and I did freelance work for a few years. And like, I loved football, mad Liverpool fan, loved drawing since I was a kid. And I never figured to put them together until Fernando Torres left Liverpool. That day, I did my first Photoshop of something to do with football. And I'd never drawn anything to do with it, ever. And I think, like, when you look back, that's pretty weird that you don't think to put your two largest passions together. Because I'd been drawing video game art, films, you know, all this stuff, but I never clicked that. So from the day I put those two together, I started a blog, started doing Photoshops every day. And the Photoshops were just silly little things, but they led to posters, which were like the retro posters. And then I started drawing bits for them. And then the balance tipped completely, where it was just, I was just making football art every day and just throwing it on Twitter and spamming people, asking for retweets. Like, every football journalist just like copy, paste, tweet. And that's how I started off. So it's
a man full of persistence.
Yeah. And I think you have to be, if you're following something like that, which is freelance. And at the time, I didn't even realize that it was freelance and I was following something. Like, I just love making things. That's it.
I think it's evident in your portfolio and your body of work, a man who likes to apply himself to plenty of areas. So just going back to the day that Fernando Torres left Liverpool, can I, like, what was the significance of that day? Was he a favourite player of yours?
Yeah, I think he represented Rafa, and it was like, you know, like, Rafa was gone. I think Alonso had gone at that stage. I think Mascherano was leaving around then, and just all the good stuff from the Rafa era was just getting torn down. And when he left, it was like, I lost interest in the club. Like, I still watched every match, but when Hodgson was managing them, like, I used to watch games and be, oh God, I hope they lose 3-0 now. I hope they lose 4-0 and Hodgson just gets kicked out of the club and get a proper manager in. It really was, my interest waned, like, for that time. And then, of course, it picked up again with Rodgers and things.
But yes.
Yeah, I think it took that, that kind of dive for me to start doing the art, because it usually bounces off something that happens within your life. So I think that was absolutely it.
And so does the Rafa Benitez Liverpool era, does that hold some special connections for you? Is that
particular fondness? Completely. Like, I think if you watch the video, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but I don't know what year it was, but Rafa and his wife came back for the Hillsborough the Hillsborough service in, maybe it could be about 8 years ago now, but they're sitting in the middle of the cop and you can see Margaret Aspinall mentions Rafa and he starts crying and the whole crowd just stands up and starts clapping. And if you watch that, I think you get how deep he was in the club and in the community. And I know that Klopp is amazing and he is deep there. Everyone loves Klopp. But there was something special about the time that Rafa was there, because the club was in the doldrums and he came in from like he was like this shining light coming in and bringing his new methods and his new players, like getting Xabi Alonso for 14 million, you know. There was something about him that he was the right man for that period, I think. And if Hicks and Gillette hadn't been at the club, I really think they, like, if it was run properly like it's run now, he would have got a league. And I think he might have got another Champions League. He would have done a bit more than he did.
Yeah. And so is there a family tie to Liverpool? Is that the way the connection is, or is the team you grew up supporting? Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, I just picked them when I was like six because everyone in my class supported Man United. And I was like, yeah, look, I'm not doing that. So Liverpool, yeah. That's all.
Yeah. And can you let people know where they can find you online just so they can be looking at your work while they're listening to us?
If you just Google my name, Dan Lynn, you can get, like, all the links are there and all the images. So you can follow everything. So I'm on Instagram under that, Twitter. That'd be the bulk of stuff, really.
Yes.
I've got minor accounts on Pinterest and Tumblr and LinkedIn, but it's not as comprehensive. So probably Instagram and Twitter is the best. You can go to danlynn.com. There's blog posts. Like, I've started that recently. I put massive effort in. I've got, like, 25 entries, and that just explains all different aspects of it. So that'd be good to be just kind of scrolling through if you were listening to this. The blog area on my website.
And so has the blog been a particular focus for you? Are you enjoying that as an outlet?
Yeah, massive. This year, actually, since February, I've just changed the entire way that I operate completely. Like, completely changed it. I got a big job at the start of the year. And once I got paid from that, I kind of went, I'm not trying to make money for the rest of the year. I'm spending all my time doing personal projects to try and figure out something new. Because, I don't know, with freelance and the way art is and content, it keeps changing. You need to be tracking down something new. So for this year, I don't know, like, if you notice, but, like, on my Twitter, I stop posting every day. I stop putting up sketches. I stop putting up doodles. I just concentrate and do projects that take a month or two.
Okay.
And when I release them, I'll have written like a type of analysis or a case study, which I'll put on the blog. So I'll tweet the work, tweet the link. It's a lot more structured than it used to be. So, like, I tweeted something yesterday, the four, the Liverpool players in the kind of streetwear.
Like, I retweeted that earlier today when I saw it. It's beautiful work.
Thank you. Yeah. So that was like, I've been at that for like a month, just drawing them, changing the poses, figuring out what they could have. So usually what I would have done before February is I would have drawn one of them in an evening, not tweaked it, not given it the night to go home and see it again in the morning and change it again. And I would have just posted it on Twitter. So I've tried to step away from that and just spend way more time tweaking things, just not rushing it and having more than one piece to post. So I'm trying to change the way that I operate. So that's what
I've also noticed is that across these individual, and I'm going to call them case studies, when there's a body of your work that, say, has a number of executions under the same campaign, each one can have its own art direction, or in my eyes, I can see that has its own look and feel. Are you conscious of applying or developing a certain look for an individual project as well as developing the idea itself, or do the two just naturally happen in together anyway?
I think it's very conscious, and it comes back to when I started out, like, I've always had trouble just drawing in one way. I always just will, if there's a new project, something else might suit the scope of that project. So I feel like I've developed a toolbox of approaches that I can use for whatever comes my way. So I did the Liverpool project for when they won the league. I don't know, did you see that? It was like all the drawings were with a rough brush and it was black ink and there was one red Nike. So that entire project, like, that's done in this kind of hand-drawn type of gritty look, which does not look like the football portraits I released yesterday of the players in the streetwear. So there's two approaches. For a few months, I was doing those really rough, full of energy sketches of players' bodies where there's no detail on the face, but it's just the pose and there's a pink shade over them. They're another style, like they aren't like those either. And then I've got the one where I'll consciously try and mimic vector work. So I will use a brush that's a circle and the width never changes. So I'll draw like I'm trying to do a stroke out of Illustrator. And yes. I did a recent Henderson portrait, which is just Henderson's face. And that one is done like that. So that is completely, everything in that is fixed width. There's no variation. So there's no energy in it, if you get what I mean. As
yes,
a
yeah, yeah.
Liverpool one. So yeah, I am conscious that there's all these different strands to it. But I feel I'm slowly going towards the drawn style of the players I released yesterday.
Okay.
That type of, I've had a lot of portfolio reviews and every one of them has mentioned Jamie Hewlett saying my work is like his.
Okay.
The line work is vaguely like his. So I think I'm just going to have to go, okay, fair enough, and just follow that. You know what I mean? Because they're the ones that get the most attention when I do them as well.
Well, I was going to ask you if there's... Have you had much of a history, or do you enjoy kind of manga or Japanese illustration or animation? Because I can see that, especially the fans project on your website, I can see influences in that figurative style of yours. Are you obviously conscious of keeping your eyes open and learning from
yes.
from whatever you see? Yeah.
Yeah. Whenever I go traveling for a long period, I find that changes my work a few months later. It'll feed into okay. it. So I went to Japan last year for a month and I was just wandering around. I had no flight home booked and I just went, I'll just follow my gut. And I just kind of soaked everything up and
wow.
Oh, it was the best. Like I really want to go back, but now we can't travel obviously.
Yes.
But the best place I've ever been for just seeing things, like it's so different to anywhere else. And it's so yeah. easy. It's easy to travel around. It's
really?
Simple. A dream. Yeah. It's a dream. Like, but yeah, no, that is a big thing where Tokyo street fashion, I started looking that up. So I've got all these boards on Pinterest where I'll scroll it every day or I'll go crazy through it every day and look for poses, look for certain styles, all that type of thing. And then I'll mash them together. And so usually, like when I'm happy with about the artwork I posted yesterday is like I've made poses that the players themselves aren't in. I've drawn the players' heads to suit. So I've made new poses. I've, you know, I haven't traced a photo or,
yeah.
you know what I mean? Like, so I've kind of created something that is new on a few levels, which is like, I think it's where you have to be with illustration. So I'm slowly getting to that area. I'm getting more focused as I experiment, I think.
And it's obviously not only sporting work that you produce. The poster campaign for Queen and Slim, the movie,
oh, yeah.
it's beautiful work. Can you just can you talk us through how that project came in and if you approached the brief any differently than if it was a brief set in the sporting world?
Yeah, that was like a job that came in, and I was so excited to get it because I think when you're working mostly in sports, you're conscious of that and you think maybe you're pigeonholed or you need to get more work because it's a false position you're in, because if this economy changes, no one wants your work. So when a job like that comes in, it's pretty good. You know, it kind of gives me a boost. So I was really excited and I did it with Storybox, the agency, and they were brilliant to work with, had barely any changes. They knew exactly what they wanted. And the main thing on that job was like, I just had to get the likenesses. So I was just yeah. drawing faces over and over and over. But generally, like I think most of the work I've got is to draw people's faces. So that was quite similar, but the subject matter and where it was going to be used and what it was quite exciting at the time. Yeah, I have to say that was.
Because they were, the campaign was positioned exclusively in kind of barbershops.
Yeah.
In London, is that right? Yeah. So yeah, how did yeah. that, how did the locations or how the campaign was going to be executed, how did that influence the work you produced?
Oh. Okay, yeah. So let's say we divided the job into two steps. So the first step and maybe the most important one is you have to get the likenesses. So we had to nail that in first. And then after, it was to apply the retro film poster vibe to it, but also get the options you might see on posters in the barbershops for, you know, like different cuts and different styles. Yes. So we had to look up that, which is nice, because the work I did first when I was posting work to, like, was it Deviant Art in 2007, is I did all retro posters. So I knew exactly how to get the texture and the age and the grit and the noise. So it's quite nice to have those skills and be able to bring them in. So that was basically it though. So it was in those two stages. Yeah, it was good.
Oh, fantastic. And from a technical point of view, can you give us an insight into the software and the hardware that you work?
Yeah, okay. I've changed it up. November 2018, I bought an iPad Pro and I started drawing in Procreate.
Okay.
Now, from when I started drawing in that app, I have a Wacom Cintiq that is just sitting here beside me. I haven't used it once in that time. Yeah. I just use the iPad. So I use Procreate for line work. That's for all my drawing now. But I still use Photoshop a lot for, like, that's a more powerful program. It has so much more functions. So I still use that. So if I had to give you a list, I use Photoshop, Procreate, Illustrator, After Effects. I'm really getting into After Effects. I put serious time in there.
Yeah, if we can just jump on that a wee bit. I was going to ask you if it is yourself that does the production with the motion work that you produce. So you do the illustration and the production as well?
Yeah, so I bought After Effects, and I got like the training book with all the little lessons in 2018. Yeah, because I bought a new iMac. So I bought that in 2018, so I'd move into animation and have it as something I could do. And I think the last month, I'm just getting to a stage now where I can like kind of doodle in the actual program. What I mean, I can just make stuff and try stuff out, because there's so much, it is so complicated. But so I do all that, and it was nice when I got the program. I got a job with Gatorade to do animations for the advert for the World Cup in 2018.
Yes,
with Suarez and Messi. I was getting to practice using the program, and it was for that job. I was like,
Is that the one with Messi slapping Suarez?
Yeah, yeah.
I love that. Yeah, that always springs to mind when I think of your motion work. So was it, did moving into motion, did that seem like a natural development for you?
It seemed like natural that it was something I had to have. Okay. But it felt like I was twisting my brain around trying to, you know, get my head around the functions of the actual program. Okay, but I've got it now. I have clicked with it. It took so long. Like, it was, you know, it's kind of soul destroying sometimes when you're so used to using a program like Photoshop or anything, and you go to a new one and you can't even walk in it. You're just, I don't even know where the functions are. So finally, I'm at a stage where I can make things that look half decent. The one I'm proud of is the Thomas Muller one. I did it a few weeks ago. You might have even seen it, but it's Thomas Muller, and it's just got a lot of scrolling text, and there's two beams of type of, what would you call them? It looks like gibberish, but it's meant to be all the kind of space that he's figuring out.
And that's So
that's all After Effects. I did the drawing in Procreate, changed a bit of it in Photoshop, and I bring that in and I create everything around it. So that's the level I'm at now. But I think it's still, you know, smoke and mirrors, because I'm not really, it's just bits moving still. It's not proper animation, you know what I mean? But it looks pretty cool.
Well, it's a couple of steps down the path to a full Dan Laden 90 minute animated movie.
Yeah. Oh my God, that'd end you. Oh.
Imagine that.
No.
Can you give us a wee insight to the work you've done for Liverpool, having the connection and the love of the club that you have, and it was the sale of Fernando Torres that set you down this path. I'm going to say this phrase knowing that there is, well, there was last year, the Liverpool This Means More campaign, but does it mean more doing work for the club that you love so much? And
Yeah.
Connection with.
I think it does. And, you know, with the nature of work, there's a big chance that it mightn't have. But I get to work with Dave, who, you know, like Dave Williams, like Dave Will, as we know him. Dave was the one that got me on that. And he's a dream to work with, like the nicest guy. And then we work with Adam, who runs the social media. And it's so nice and it's cozy and it's friendly. And I have to say, it's it does feel like the LFC family, you know.
Yeah. It does.
Because you know everyone that does the work and it's really nice and there's quick feedback and it's friendly feedback. And everyone genuinely likes the club and it's obviously a dream job.
Am I right in thinking that this means more kind of angle of the campaign is having people that have that connection to the club producing the work. So that just feeds into the family vibe of the club itself, which is special.
Yeah. So I think there might be, I think it's extended, but there's like 7 or 8 of us now that make the illustrations. But I think when it started, I think there was 5 of us or 6. And we were all from separate countries and we all supported Liverpool. So there's this link that there's a tight little, you know, like little bond, I suppose, like because everyone does actually support the club and they're quite invested where you mightn't have that. Like, let's say I'm doing work for a club in a league I'm not familiar with. I don't know the history of the club. I'm still going to give it my all, but I can't draw on all that useless knowledge of Liverpool from the last 20 years to make the work. And I think everyone has that is actually working on this stuff. So it gives it another vibe, an extra level.
Yeah, almost that intangible thing that you can't quite describe. Yeah. Humour often seems to be a large factor in your work or something that I at least pick up on. And I remember when I was studying my master's, asking for your input on how you incorporate humour into your work. Is that something that just flows through you naturally, that bringing this kind of sense of fun and witty humour to your work?
Yeah, and it's quite subjective, I suppose.
Yeah,
I think most people they'd be loath to say, yeah, I'm funny or my work is funny because, you know, like most people watching are going, he's not funny. That's not funny. But it did go well for me with memes. When I was making memes for Instagram, like I got so much followers in that year, just like thousands of people loved it. And then I got sick of making memes and like I lost thousands of followers. But yeah, like the memes were silly. Like that's the thing. Like I don't know. I suppose my whole thing is like not to take football that seriously and just like make it inspires such passion in people that like it's fun to just puncture it and go, it's not, it's just football. It is just football at the end of the day. And you might be down when a team loses, but like it's not that important. Wit is in my work in that way, I suppose.
Well, it is essentially a children's game that adults take very, very overly seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it, I suppose. That's yeah.
How about Dan Layden, the football player? Is there a Dan Layden football player?
Well, he hasn't been a football player since 2012. So I'm 33 now, and I tore my cruciate ligament when I was 16. And I tried to come back a few times and tore it again and again. And then I tore cartilage and, you know, all these other things are linked to it. So I ended up having like 4 knee operations and I just knocked it on the head. I remember Good Friday, 2012. It's the last time I played football.
Oh, wow. Significant. Yeah. Remembered that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was so clear because I love football so much. And from there, I started doing the football illustration, which is, you know, like, I suppose something needed it, some type of outlet. So that's where the energy went then. So.
And how would you describe yourself as a football player?
I suppose all passion. I loved it. I like keep running. I suppose I just keep running till the final whistle. Loved it. Would try. Yeah, I just love exercise. I just love sweating. So like, just keep chasing it around. I'd be a fast runner. That'd be my thing, I suppose. But that's it. Yeah, I just keep trying. I'd play anywhere. Like, I'm not tall, so I couldn't play like centre back or wherever, but I'll do anything. I just like kicking a football. I don't think I was that good, but I liked it a lot.
Sounds like you've got the right mentality for a player anywhere. So put you in any position and and you can do a job for the team.
Yeah, I'll try.
You do non-football sports portraits, and you have a real ability to, in my eyes, to pull out certain character traits from individuals and really, really capture what is different about an individual and create a visual based on that. I always remember your Maurizio Sarri. I've seen a couple of your portraits of his, and I've seen a couple of your Serena Williams portraits. Is there something specific about sports people that you like capturing the essence of? Is there anything about sports people that you enjoy trying to capture in a visual?
Yeah, I think, and I've never really thought about this, but just having a think now, if you like drawing, you like drawing the human body. Like, I like drawing bodies in motion because there's so much cool shapes, and you can usually capture a pose in two type of long curvy kind of strokes. Like, you might get a full pose of energy in two massive lines, and that is really, really attractive. And once you start trying to capture that, that's quite easy, I find, to capture energy, because when someone's running or they're sprinting, it's kind of messy. It's not very refined. But to capture a personality in a face, that takes skill. And like, I'd love to think at some stage I'd be able to make really arresting portraits that capture the character. Because I think you can draw something that looks like someone, but you might not capture exactly that relationship of the eyes to the nose to the mouth that just has their face. And I'd love to get there in the end. So I think the reason I'm doing that with sports people is because I was starting at that side of capturing poses and figures in motion. And then you're just going, I might try and capture this person's face now. But the Sarri portrait, I feel, was one where everything went right. Every element of it, except one bit. And I've noticed it since. His right arm is like, so let's say the clothes end here.
Yep.
Arm is like this, or it looks wrong now, or it looks like his arm is too long. And I notice it now every time I look at it. But that was one that went completely right.
Yeah. Is there any person who you haven't done a portrait of that most springs to mind right now that you think, I've always wanted to try and capture that person?
Yeah, I've never drawn Rafa. I've never drawn like Rafa Benitez.
Oh, really?
Yeah, isn't that weird? Yeah. Like, and he's the man. If I had to meet anyone in football, I'd meet him.
Really?
Him. I'd love that.
Well, I was going to ask at some point, what would your dream brief be? Or you know, when you're retired and you're looking back and thinking, today I'm gonna remember that project. Putting you on the spot right now, what would that be? Or would it be Rafa commissions you to do a painting to hang up?
God, who knows? I never think like this, but like, okay. I do have a few clients that they just represent, I suppose, magic to me. Like,
okay, great.
National Geographic, for some reason, I've always looked at the magazines and thought, how cool would it be to work for that? You know,
and
be sent off somewhere and do something. That type of thing would strike me as like, you know, that's the type of work. Christoph Niemann has done a few bits with him, I think, where he went on a boat up to Svalbard, that island off the top of Norway, and he drew everything he did. And I just thought, that type of stuff is the dream. You know.
Oh, interesting. So, quite different from what would necessarily be your day to day. Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose, like, I love travel, so I'm kind of mixing travel with football, maybe something like that. That'd be the one.
And you mentioned earlier about long trips that you do go on. So when you do go on holidays, do you like to go for a month at a time as you did in Japan? Do you like going on longer trips?
Yeah, I've done a few of them. I went to Egypt for 5 weeks a few years ago, and then I went to Canada for 6 weeks. Went to Japan for a month. I've done a lot. Like, I've been in Thailand. I did the Everest Base Camp trek in 2014. That took like 3 weeks. So I do like doing that. Yeah. And like the one in Japan was great because I brought my iPad and I was drawing everywhere, just drawing everywhere. Like, it was a dream holiday. It really was. So yeah, that's my dream type of pursuit.
Yeah. You must have a heck of a hard drive.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. There's a lot there now. Like,
can you talk us through the Just Dan It campaign? It was always a body of work that really struck me. The use of typography, a really striking portraiture style, side on, and a personal piece of work that you could absolutely see being picked up by a brand, because for an art director, that's a very easy connect. Mm-hmm. You know, and you can absolutely see how that campaign could be used in context. So can you give us a wee bit of an insight to the Just Dan It campaign?
I can, yeah. That was me trying to get Nike to pay me more. Like, I just wanted more jobs with Nike. So I thought, I'll make up a Nike campaign. That was all this was. And it worked.
Oh, good.
So I sent the work to some of the people that I knew, and they gave me one or two jobs, so that led straight to it. But the actual work itself, it's my favorite way to draw, side on, where you get to see the person in profile. It's just so much more interesting than straight on portraits. I hate drawing them.
No, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, definitely. So I had always wanted to make work that, because you see a lot of posters, which is a footballer's head and the footballer's name. And it's just one and two, you know, they're just sitting there.
Yes.
So I wanted one that just melded them together, so they were the same thing, but you could get the two elements out of it. So it had to be players with names that only had six letters, because it wouldn't have looked good if there was like a Mascherano and you have to look through his head.
The players you've picked are ideal for it anyway.
Yeah, like the fun bit with that was that like Nike athletes are generally like the brasher side of the game. I think like they've got Neymar, they had Rooney, they've got Ronaldo. That it's more ego players, I feel.
Okay.
And that might be me just looking at it that way. They had Pogba as well then. They've got more personality, you know, they're kind of larger. So I just picked all those and a lot of them worked out. Now I look back at it now. Neymar doesn't look like Neymar. Sanchez doesn't look like Sanchez. Iniesta doesn't look like Iniesta. But the ones that worked were Ronaldo, Ribery. I think the Pogba one is okay.
The Coutinho one's beautiful. I'm just scrolling through them now.
That worked. That really worked, that one, yeah. And thank you. That one worked. Christian Benteke worked. That one came out perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's a few there, but there's always ones that are weaker, I suppose. So
I'll tell you what, my favorite one of those is the Ribery.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It worked. And the colour palette with him specifically is beautiful. Well, can we talk about your use of colours? Because it's something that you can go from the slightly more pastel types of the fans and the players case studies you've got on your website, right through to the kind of real kind of almost neon poppy backgrounds of the portraits further down your site. So can you talk us through your use of colour?
Yeah, I suppose it all depends. I've had a few portfolio reviews and like a lot of the feedback has been, I need to get more sensitive palettes, you know? So yes. I look at a lot of illustration work like Ava B. You know that illustrator?
Eva B, yes. Yeah.
She does a lot of work for The Guardian. I'd look at her palettes and be like, this is very good. I need to be going in this direction. she seems like a proper illustrator to me.
Yeah. And she's lovely. Yeah. She's lovely to speak to as well. Eva, if you reach out to her, she's lovely to chat to. Yeah.
Yeah. The same with your own work. So you have very specific, and there is actually a bit of a range within them. So it looks like, so I might look at one of your pieces and I go, that's red. And then I see like a bit of neon green, but the neon green is set against it and it pops, and you see it when you see it, you see the red first and it guides you through the piece. Yeah. So like this type of thing is, I'm always trying to learn about this. And like, I don't know, are you like this, but I have a folder of work I've saved from all the illustrators I see. And I'm like, oh, look what they've done there. Save, put it in my folder. I put it in my head. You know,
For me, I've got a folder on my laptop called Nice. Yeah, and it's just stuff, actually that tends to be other illustrators or artists' work. But I love taking photos of stuff. And even, so I've got a wee side project called The Scenes I See that I've only done one of so far, but it's just getting back into it, of illustrating some of my favorite shots from TV shows or movies. And watching Bosch at the minute.
Oh, yeah.
So pausing that and then taking a photo of a shot because I really like how it's like a widescreen shot of LA at the golden hour, and you're seeing the colours bouncing off the skyscrapers. I have that exact same folder as yourself.
Yeah. Oh, you've kind of reminded me there. Vincent Mahe. I don't know, am I saying his name right? Have you seen his work? He's a French illustrator. He's done one of those really nice houses on the Hollywood Hills, which are all glass. And there's like a panorama of the city and it's all blue and there's reds and oranges in it. His work is, oh my God. M-A-H-E.
Oh, sorry. Yes. Yeah. I recognize the work, not the name. Oh, thank you for telling me that name.
Oh, so like that is just like they're the palettes. Like he's done some work for PSG and it is, oh my God, just the best.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'll jump on that.
That's actually a really good one for someone using colour in the PSG work. Now, I think I'm pretty sure it was when United played PSG, I think. And he's made the work from one of the fancy boxes and you see the pitch. But the color of the pitch is this vibrant turquoise, but everything else around it in the box is like stepped back. So it just works. Like it's top-notch illustration work. It really is.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to let people know who that is. So it's Vincent and then Mahe, M-A-H-E, if people want to go and look at his work.
Oh, so good.
So Dan, just looking ahead into the future.
Yeah.
What does the future hold for Dan Leyden?
Oh, a lot. I hate talking about it because I feel that if I talk about it, it takes the steam out of the plans.
Ah, okay. No, but I really respect that.
But I will talk around it. So,
no, fantastic. Appreciate that.
Yeah, so I feel like the last 7 years for me have been about practice. And I think you can go on forever trying to learn and practice, but you have to take it at some stage that, okay, I have to start using my work now.
Yeah.
So the Liverpool project we were on about earlier, where I did all the black and white drones with the red Nike swoosh, that was about application. That was me using my work for something. So that's kind of my vibe going forward now. Like, what's the next 7 years going to be? The last 7 years have been practice. I've been learning bits and pieces. I want to make some things. So the next 7 years, this is what I'm going to try.
Well, you've published books yourself in the
self-published. yeah.
Well, actually, I was hoping because I wasn't quite sure if it had been self-published. If it has, even better, because that means you've got more to tell us about. Can you talk us through the process of self-publishing a book of your own art?
If anyone is interested, where have I put the bloody link? I kept every aspect of making that book in a thread on Twitter. So it's there. It's on my website somewhere. There's a link to it. Oh, it might be on my shop. That's the only thing for sale in my shop, which is on my website. And if you click into the actual listing in the book in the shop, I think there's a link to that thread, which is like a long way to go. But
yes, yeah,
I did every aspect of that. I laid it out. I made it in InDesign. I wrote every article. I made every bit of artwork, everything. I have one memory of making it where one evening I had to go through the entire book, like it's 250 pages, and I had to put in every dash over a C in someone's name or over an E, you know, all the little dashes in all the languages.
The accents, yeah.
Oh my God. Like my eyes were looking like two different ways at the end of it.
Yeah.
The hours I put into it, like.
And sorry, you did that in one evening, going back over the copy and inserting the accents.
Yeah.
Like, oh goodness.
Late my night. Goodness, right.
Yeah.
I don't think I've got over it. But so I think I got 200 copies of the book. So I just kind of paid up front and got them. And I was lucky, they sold out pretty quick. And I got another 100 or 200. And I've got like, I think 30 left. And I haven't really pushed it. So I'd say I could sell them if I really pushed it. But I had my poster shop purring away and going well. And I found I was so sick of putting posters in tubes and sending them out and going to the post office. And it took like 3 hours every day. And I wanted to be drawn. Like I wanted to be drawn, not packaging. So I knocked that on the head in 2015. And then like that year on Instagram, I got like 60,000 followers because I had more time to like make work every day instead of been putting posters in tubes.
Yeah.
But like it did raise my profile a bit and I got some nice large jobs off that. Sorry, I've rambled a bit off from
no,
the book.
Not at all.
Yeah. No, but it was nice putting the book together because I felt like that was like the end of a chapter in my life where I went, okay, this is 7 years of my work. This work is done now. I'm moving forward from here. And I think I still have that vibe where I'm trying to figure out what to do with my work now.
Okay, yeah.
So that's what I'm trying to leave behind all the bits. And if you flick through that book, it is just all the different styles I was trying out to see what worked, what didn't. Because George Carlin, the comedian,
yes,
I think he had a new set every single year. He never had old material when he was on stage. He always did new stuff. And I thought, like, I want to be like that, where I just, even if something works, I just stop doing it and do something new. Because I find it, I just like making things. I never sketch. I just fill notebooks. I've got like, I don't know if you can see the bookcase behind me.
Yes, absolutely.
That's full of my notebooks, just with nonsense in them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's how I come up with like what would be interesting to draw. But okay. I just fill notebooks. That's what I do most days, just fill notebooks.
Do you ever then go back over the notebooks to you know, I need to go through that notebook I completed last week to see what I can pick out from there to take further forward? Yes.
Yeah, that, like I go through the ones I've had from 2011 and like I will always land on something and then I can bring that forward now. Always. So whenever I'm flicking through a notebook, I'll find something that I can now carry out that I wouldn't have been able to do then.
Yeah.
So I always do that. Like I've got an envelope taped to the side of my desk, and when I have an idea, I just write it on a post-it and put it in the envelope. So I've got an envelope of ideas there if I ever need some.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
see, I've got a little blue book that I know can always fit into whatever pocket I can put in. And the other it was last week, I was just finished reading before nodding off, and I discovered that I was able to write legibly in the dark because I picked up a pen. I couldn't be bothered to turn on the light. And it was just because often the way I think is I'll think of a visual, but it's by giving that visual a name or like a title, it then allows my head to start thinking how that visual is really going to work.
Yeah.
So as soon as I write that down, that's the best thing I can do to make sure it doesn't get lost.
Oh, that's the best. I think that's the best thing. If you keep a notebook, it is the best thing for coming up with stuff. That you just have these little, because things will flash into your head and flash out. And if you have them written down and captured, you can always come back to it. It's there. It's like a fossil, and you can find it and go, oh, I remember this now. Yes, okay. Let's move forward with it. Like, keeping a notebook and walking, I think, are the two best. Just, it's brilliant. It's free as well. Well, you know, it's free. You still have to buy a notebook. But it's just the most useful stuff. Like, I have a perfect example of it. I was on overdrive the last few days, like in the office till 11:30 at night, most nights, finishing the Liverpool players. Mm-hmm. And when I was coming up with Sadio Mane, like, I needed stuff on the clothes that, you know, made sense for the player. And like, I like doing those graphics where you take a famous brand name and change a letter, and then it's a player's name and it might make sense in relation to that player. So he's in Liverpool, and like, every time I've been in Liverpool, like, the Radio City Tower is there just looming over the city. So I was like, Sadio City, I'll just change the R to an S. And I had that on the walk I had just before I went to the office. So I was like, yes, I can put that on the hoodie. Someone will notice it and they'll be like, oh, nice one.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it's priceless being out there getting fresh air. So good.
Well, I was going to ask that for someone that produces, even just the volume of work that you produce is very impressive, as well as the quality. And is it is just important, your time away from the screen as it is in front of the screen, and giving your eyes a rest, getting some fresh air, you know, the importance for that is just as much as doing the work itself.
Yeah, it's like that saying where if you have 6 hours to cut down a tree, spend 4 hours sharpening the axe. You know what I mean? You have to prepare. My eyes would be fried. Because a lot of people are on their phone. And now, so I'm using my phone. I'm having a look at the iPad to draw. And then I might play the PlayStation. So you've got these screens all the time. And like, I need to stop that. Because if I want to draw for that long, like, I'll get a pain here. You know, your eyes will be strained or something. You need to be in tip-top shape. So I think it's so important to have time away from it. So so coming into it, you're fully fit for it, like, basically.
Even chemically, I'm saying this as someone who is not anywhere near as much educated in biology or chemistry or any kind of science as he should be. But chemically, there is a reaction that your eyes take when looking at artificial light as opposed to natural light. Yeah. So it is just not good for your eyes to be looking at non-natural light anyway. So
absolutely, like, that's pretty worrying. And phones are so new because no one knows what they're actually doing. Yeah. And
test generation.
So like, I hate my phone in a way. It's so useful, but like, it is annoying. Like, I like going for a walk and leaving my phone in the house, and I have no phone. I'm just walking for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Feels like freedom. So I might get rid of it eventually. Or, you know, I just have a paired back phone or something, because they're too much. They're just too much.
Yeah. Really. Now, I have enjoyed, where I am here at the flat, just across the road, is a supermarket, and then down the road is a park. So within this block, there's everything that you need, but at the same time, it means that it's very easy to always be having it with you. Yeah. But that morning walk in the morning, so I'm just getting over a hip injury from getting back to football. Ooh. And so just about to start running again. But when I can't run, I'll go out just to walk around the block and around the park in the morning, just for that fresh air before I sit down for the day. And I've started leaving my phone behind for that also, because I like listening to the outdoors, like hearing other people talk, well, not eavesdropping, but you know, just the sounds of life that isn't a podcast or music or a radio station, you know.
Yeah, like, that's interesting, because I noticed lately, I realized I'm constantly listening to things. When I'm drawn, I'll have a podcast or something on. Then I might have music. Then I go home, the TV's on, there's a podcast on. When I'm in bed, I used to put on a podcast and I'd fall asleep listening to it. There's never, there's never silence.
Yeah.
Never. So I just thought, I've really kind of cut down on that. Because when I was in Japan, I just had the headphones in and was just walking around, just listening to music, listening to podcasts. But I don't think I'd do that again, because I'm conscious of the health of my ears as well, to be honest, because I think headphones all the time, not good. So, yeah.
Well, I'm really bad at having headphones on really loud and not noticing until I've someone's tapped me on the shoulder to say hello and I've just taken them off for a second, you know?
Yeah. I haven't used my headphones since February. Just
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, just said no, done, because I realized I have that I've got this ringing in my ears because I used to listen to music so much.
Tinnitus, is that?
Yeah, so I just said, okay. I'm never listening to them again. Yeah, exactly. It's not worth it.
Yeah. And so talking about playing on the PlayStation, what games do you play?
Oh, I would be, like, my sister loves multiplayers like Fortnite.
Okay,
yeah. I'm the other end of the spectrum where I like Red Dead Redemption 2, where it's a story and it's this slow game. And I just love the story side of things. I love that. World building, characters, all that stuff. I love it. Love it. The Last of Us 2 was like, I think that game is like the pinnacle of, I don't know what you'd call it, I suppose, media or entertainment. But that game, playing through that game, I have never tried anything like that. It was a different level to everything else. It really was.
Really?
And there was a lot of hate about it. But to play through it was mind blown. It was mind blown, because I know people that don't play games might not see the difference between playing the game and watching someone playing the game. But to be in that game and actually conscious that you're the one who's making the decisions, I'd advise anyone to play that. It was amazing. It blew my head off.
Yeah. Fantastic. Oh. Well, I think I might have to jump on. Actually, I'm popping into town tomorrow. I'm braving the outdoors and going into town. So I might have a look. I do need to break away from Football Manager for a change.
I've never actually played that, but it's meant to be the most addictive game, isn't it?
But I'm I've managed to control it. Like during the day, during a working day, I'll often use that as a wee break from work. So I'm good enough to just give myself 20 minutes and then stop. You know, but I'll set myself a challenge of I'm going to do some which players are out of contract next summer. So I'll set myself a little task like that. So the ultimate question that everyone on the show has been getting, Dan, can you tell us your favorite kit and your favorite boots, please?
Yeah, I think I can. I've got a lot of kits that I like, and I feel like tweeting this a lot, and I know it's like not the accepted opinion of a football fan. I don't really get the appeal of kits. And I know that sounds crazy. Like, I see people tweeting a lot over the last few weeks. Oh, I love this kit. I love that kit. And I'm like, I don't get that hype. Like, there's some beautiful kits that I love, and there's three or four that I love. But I think a lot of the ones that have just been released, I'm not crazy about them. I'd have to look back through them, but I do like the new Man United one, the crazy one.
Oh, the third kit. Yeah.
No, I think the socks and shorts, or even just the shorts, need to be black. I think having that is kind of too much on the three bits. But I think that kit is just a fashion piece anyways. And no one's going to
buy it. I think the matching shorts and socks, if I remember right in reading this, the shorts and socks are basically available for the fans, but the team, when the team wear it, it's a plain short. But for some reason, I think I'm remembering it will be white shorts. I might be wrong on that, but they're plain shorts. Yeah, plain shorts and socks for the players.
Yeah, but I do think it's interesting. Like, that clicks in with the streetwear bits that I was making lately of the fans and then the players. Like, I find that interesting. Like, that is interesting. But I think that clubs are releasing these, like, wildcard third kits, like they're just nuts. I do like that, because Liverpool had one a few years ago that was horrendous. Do you remember the one that was like a Christmas jumper? Do you remember it was like white and black and red and yellow spots on it? Was it Hodgson was managing then?
Was it Warrior?
It was Warrior. Yeah. With that one, it was nuts. It was like, well, okay, sorry. My favorite kits, I would say, the year United signed Pogba, they had that black kit. I think it's the one he's wearing in the video, the announcement video with Stormzy. That's a lovely kit. That's lovely. The grey Liverpool kit that they had maybe 2 years ago, the grey one with the, it was, who was it? It was New Balance, yeah. The grey one, the away kit, lovely kit. But I love, the Boca Juniors one is just perfect.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's just
the one. Like, whatever the classic one is, there's a classic one.
Yeah.
It just looks right. It's that's the one.
You'd whenever have you to see, do...
Yeah, go on, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, you'd have to do something pretty severe to make a poor Boca Juniors kit. You really would.
It's the best kit. That's the one. I really like that. In internationals, there's a Japanese one, isn't there? I think the Japanese away one or the home one now is pretty cool. I saw Minamino in it. One of them is really... I saw it and I was like, oh, damn, yeah, that's pretty cool. But I'd say the Boca one, yeah. Has to be. Oh, and boots. When I was playing, I got a pair of Nike. I think they were Nike Air Roma. This would have been about 1999, 2000. I remember them boots. And they never really... I've never seen... Like, they never brought them forward, I don't think. But they had the laces going along the side of the boot so you could strike the ball better or some, I don't know. Like, 12-year-old me gobbled that up anyways. Oh, brilliant. But they were nice boots. But I suppose the Ronaldinho Nike ones, they're just kind of basic. Big Nike swoosh and they're black. They're nothing too fancy. I think they're cool boots.
You know what? I had a really dark navy pair of those and they had, his kind of gold little signature thing. I had a pair of them, but I bought them to never to wear, just to have them on display, just because they looked nice. And then I only got rid of them because I was clearing some stuff before moving overseas for a wee while. So I hope they're still in good condition, being well displayed somewhere, because they were beautiful. Kind of wish I'd held on to them.
Something lovely about boots. I was given a pair of boots by Nike for the first job I did with Nike. That was social media campaign for the ACC, which was the boot that was made from castor beans. It was like...
Yes.
So they sent me a pair of these, and there was only 700 that are made. And they were like... Yeah, they weighed less than an iPhone. They were like... weighed nothing. So they were so perfect and pristine. I was like, I can't wear these and smash a football around in the mud. Like, and I'm crap at football wearing these bits of, like, works of art in my feet. So I just gave them to someone I knew. He was like 15, and I think he used them in training or something. So they're somewhere in someone's room, wrecked.
That's very kind of you.
Yeah, but I just thought, like, if you keep these bits that they send you, I don't like to treat them as, like, fancy bits. I think it can kind of stunt your work or something, because you start to, like, I don't know, like, really care about them and they're... I don't know. I just thought they might as well be used anyways, you know, so...
Yeah.
It was pretty good funny though, I think. Yeah. Anyway.
Fantastic, Dan. Well, thank you for joining us today. It's been incredibly insightful. I've learned a lot myself, and I'm sure the audience have learned even more.
I hope so. And I have to say, like, it's so nice that I can sit here for 45 minutes and chat about football art. It's so nice that someone actually wants to hear. Like, that is, it's really encouraging, and it's a massive honor. So thanks very much.
Oh, well, you're a big inspiration to the whole global audience. You really are, Dan. And I'm sure you'll be humble and say it's not true, but you were undefeated in the BT Sports hashtag Champions Draw campaigns. And no, you've always been very much at the forefront of creative work in the sporting world. So I can't imagine anyone not wanting to hear from you. So thankful for your time.
Thank you very much. That's very, very kind.
Brilliant. Thanks, good man, Mark. Dan. Thank you very much. Cheers.
All right.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.